from the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, the battle for the internet. Special hello to Coast longtime listener, Carol in Sun Valley, California. Thank you, Carol, and enjoy your life, my dear. Here's what's happening. The major thrust of the new coronavirus cases here in the United States happens to be now, they say, in the South and West, where officials say more young people are ignoring social distancing measures and they're testing positive. And they say the young people are more likely to have milder outcomes from coronavirus, but they still can infect others who are more at risk. I'm just back in Los Angeles, wearing my mask when appropriate. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration is advising you not to use hand sanitizer products manufactured by this company, Esk Biochem. I'm going to spell it for you. Eskbiochem, due to the potential presence of a toxic chemical. The FDA has discovered that methanol, a substance that can be toxic when absorbed through skin or ingested in samples of Lavar gel or Clean Care no germ hand sanitizers, both produced by this Mexican company, do not use it. They are seriously warning you. The U.S. Secret Service tonight told members of the White House press corps to immediately leave the White House grounds, a highly unusual decision that did not immediately come with an explanation. The decision came during an ongoing demonstration in Lafayette Square, across the street from the White House, where protesters were trying to bring down a statue of former President Andrew Jackson that stands in the middle of the park. The protesters were eventually pushed back out of the park by police. A total of 38% of Americans say that they approve the way that President Trump is handling his job as president. 58% say they disapprove of the way the president is handling his job, according to the latest survey from the American Research Group. In May, 40% approved, 57% disapproved, so he's dropped a little bit. A statement from North Korea's embassy in Moscow, observing the 70th anniversary of the still ongoing Korean War, threatened a sensational event leading to the destruction of the United States. What the heck is going on? In a moment, we'll talk a little bit more about North Korea with our special guest, William Craig Reed. Australia views China as the chief suspect in a spate of cyber attacks of increasing frequency in recent months, according to three sources. What does this all mean? Let's check in with our friend and expert on the internet, Lauren Weinstein. Lauren, what's the Chinese? What are they up to?
Well, I think we need to back up a bit again here, because even in Australia, they're arguing about whether or not the Chinese are actually behind this latest series of attacks. In fact, it's not even very clear if these are actually a new series of attacks or just kind of the attacks that are going on all the time from China or Iran or North Korea or Russia. And let's also keep in mind that Western countries also engage in cyber attacks. And this is all done, everybody does it for different reasons, but mostly it's for industrial espionage, trying to opportunistically vacuum up whatever info they can get their hands on for that might come in handy later. And this finger-pointing about which country is doing it at any given time is almost entirely political in nature, because when you have so many countries engaging in this kind of activity, it doesn't really matter too much if the source is China or Russia or Grand Fenwick, for that matter. It becomes largely a political engagement, and the bottom line is always the same. If governments and businesses and other organizations kept their software up to date and practiced good security measures like two-factor login and ideally used U2F FIDO security keys, they'd be much more secure against cyber attacks, irrespective of where they came from. It wouldn't matter if they were coming from foreign governments or other sources. And that kind of security is really what we should be concentrating on, and we probably shouldn't be letting the politicians distract us too much with finger-pointing.
Now, I agree with that, Lauren. However, I wouldn't put it past the Chinese to be hacking. Would you?
Just like everybody else. They have major hacking organizations. I think most countries with any kind of significant intelligence operations are operating internet hacking operations of one sort or another.
Everybody's doing it.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Lauren. Good to talk to you again. U.S. home sales dropped to their lowest level in more than 9.5 years in May, strengthening expectations for a sharp contraction in the housing market activity in the second quarter, following disruptions caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. Archaeologists have discovered a huge 1.2-mile-long ring of Neolithic shafts near Stonehenge in southern England. The experts, led by the UK's University of Bradford, report that the shafts are up to 33 feet wide and 16.4 feet deep. These structures have been carbon dated back to 2500 BC. Well, it's that time for Dr. Sky, Stephen Cates, to join us with his weekly astronomical report. What do you have for us tonight, Stephen? Can't wait.
Hello there, George, and hello, everyone. We begin, George, of course, with astronomy. And recent research by astronomers tells us there could be as many as 6 billion Earth-like planets in our Milky Way galaxy alone. And this report comes to us in a recent study published in the Astronomical Journal. And here's what it says. In which the Kepler planet hunting program from that great telescope called for only originally 0.02% Earth-like planets around a Sun-like star, or what they call a G-class star. Now the scientists have upped their research and said that this number may be too small. And now they've upped it to 0.18% per G-class star. So in simple English, in other words, there could be well upwards of 6 billion Earth-like planets in our Milky Way alone. So there you go, George. Lots of exploring to do there about what might be habitable. We then move on to space, and shares, naturally, of Virgin Galactic stock surge on news of a signed agreement between the company and NASA on Virgin Galactic being in the business of training astronauts for trips to the International Space Station. This agreement, known as the Private Orbital Astronaut Readiness Program, all this part of a larger space pact known as the Space Act Agreement. And, George, this is fascinating with SpaceX. You know, for the lucky listeners and viewers down in Florida, they get to see another launch of Starlink satellites by SpaceX, and that should occur this Thursday. And if that launch goes off as planned, they'll be, get a load of this, some 600 Starlink satellites in orbit, and they're going to be doing some serious beta testing on the connectivity. We wrap it up, George, always with the live sky, with summer now underway. Enjoy the shortest nights of the year, obviously, in the Northern Hemisphere. And welcome to lunation number 1206. Now, if you look into the western part of the sky in the evening, folks, you'll get to see a thin, beautiful crescent moon in the northwest at sunset, first quarter moon on Sunday the 28th. And this particular next full moon, George, is fascinating. On the night of July 4th, the next amazing moon of the year, the full thunder or buck moon. And for planets, look in the southeast sky at 10 p.m. We've been talking about this a lot, George. Jupiter and Saturn rise very close together near the constellation Sagittarius the Archer. They're easy to see, only 5 degrees apart, and they both come to opposition in mid-July. They're spectacular in small telescopes. Mars rises in the east around midnight, now 84% illuminated, as we mentioned last week, with a bright southern polar cap in a medium to large telescope. Dr. Sky naturally reminds everyone to always remember to keep their eyes to the skies. Check out the great websites we promote, theskylive.com, wikisky.org. And obviously, George, I'm proud, that is, to be here as the navigator on the highway to the heavens.
We're proud to have you there, my friend, Dr. Sky, Stephen Cates. 20 years ago, a Russian submarine disaster occurred. All 118 personnel on that sub died. It's a horrible story. In a moment, William Craig Reed joins us. His latest work is called Spies of the Deep. We'll talk about this episode. We'll also talk about North Korea. What in the world are they up to? Simply leaving a statement saying a sensational event will lead to the destruction of the United States? What does that mean? Up next, William Craig Reed with me on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie back with you, William Craig Reed back with us. He was last on about 3 years ago. He served as a U.S. Navy diver, submarine weapons technician, espionage photographer for special ops aboard nuke fast submarines. He earned his commendations for completing secret missions during the Cold War, several in concert with Navy SEAL teams, and is the only author invited by the U.S. Navy to observe recent ICEX operations in the Arctic. And William, I spent 9 years, 9 to 11 years with the Navy, depending on how many I put in. But I got to tell you, thank you for serving.
Well, thank you for serving. Appreciate that.
I love the Navy. I had a great time there.
I did too, actually. You know, people say that they wouldn't take $1 million for another minute, but I actually enjoyed it. I really did.
I want to spend a lot of time on your new book, Spies of the Deep, and that comes out in July, right? Or is it out yet?
Well, it is actually out now on pre-order, and it will be shipping in July.
Aha. Okay, great. Well, we'll be talking about that. What a disaster that was with that Russian sub. But this story with North Korea has caught my eye, and it's weird. Why is North Korea's embassy in Moscow sending out information threatening a sensational event leading to the destruction of the United States? I thought the president and Kim Jong-un were friends.
Well, it's not clear that Kim Jong-un is still alive. And this may actually be moves by his sister, Yo Jong. A lot of indications are that he perhaps, if he is alive, he's incapacitated. And she has perhaps taken control. She ordered the destruction of the Inter-Korean Liaison Office, a huge provocation against South Korea, with a $50 million facility, a de facto embassy, if you will. And she has taken all kinds of other measures. She's doing official addresses on his behalf, wearing attire that portrays her as being in power. She's removed statues from the main square. She's taken his observation deck down. All kinds of reasons to believe that she may be in power, not him.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about what you believe the North Koreans did with South Korea's liaison office. They blew it up. Tell us about this.
Well, absolutely. And Yo Jong is in command at this point. All of these moves are to solidify her power. You have to remember that North Korea is a patriarchal state. And so for a woman to take control, it's unheard of. So in order to maintain that control, she's going to have a very strong position. And it may be that all these moves that she's making are to solidify her power. That would be one, a provocation against South Korea. The other would be what we're hearing about with, I'm going to destroy America. You know, these are sword brandishings, if you will, but all predictable moves if she is trying to solidify her power.
Well, I got to tell you, William, you make a lot of sense, because I don't think Kim Jong-un would be threatening us this way. If he were still in control, I think he kind of wants detente. So there is something going on there.
Well, no question. And there have been a lot of questions about whether or not some of these videos or images were doctored, or they were, if you will, put together from older pictures, and a lot of indications to show that perhaps he is, if he's not still with us, at least incapacitated. And she is solidifying her power base.
Now, if the sister, Kim Jong-un, is in charge, what happened to the brother?
Well, it's always been considered that the brother was not strong enough to be in power. He was never in line for that reason, even though, as a patriarchal state, he would be the most logical choice. But those that are in power now have not looked at him as being a strong leader, whereas Yo Jong has always been a very strong, hard-headed person who would immediately step in and take control if she was given that opportunity, and it sure looks that way.
Now, beyond just trying to threaten us to make her power base look stronger, isn't that kind of dumb to do?
Not necessarily. They've done a lot of things that have not been met with any kind of reciprocation. And I think the biggest one, of course, was back in 2010 when they sunk the South Korean ship, the Chinmen, and they killed 46 sailors. The U.S. proved that it was actually one of their torpedoes shot from a Senpo submarine. We know that to be the case. We had that proven that it was a CHT-02D, but we couldn't do anything about it. And they know that. So her provocations are brandishing, knowing that we're probably not going to take any action in reciprocation.
Now, in this liaison office bombing that destroyed this facility, do we know if anybody died?
No reports of that, although it is believed that perhaps some South Koreans, if not, were killed, were injured, but no official reports have come out on that yet.
Now, the office, though, was based in North Korea, right?
That's correct. Just across the border in North Korea. However, it was like an embassy. It was considered to be property of both countries. So it is definitely a provocation. It is not legally, if you will, totally North Korean property.
William, I've been looking at the video of the implosion, and it looks, you know, much like a Vegas casino going down, which to me means that this was intentional one, but it was it took some time to plant the explosives in that building the way it came down.
No question. This was planned for some time, and that's why a lot of experts believe that it is Yo Jung. She is known to be the one who pulled the trigger, if you will. And that would be an absolute strategic move on her part, planned well ahead of time. So as she saw her brother perhaps fading away, or maybe he passed away some time ago, those plans went into place.
If he died, why are they keeping it a secret?
That's the way North Korea operates, isn't it? They just they don't like to tell anybody about anything. And it may be that she's putting together all of these puzzle pieces and these chess moves to solidify her power before she makes the official announcement.
Now, that's a good point, too. They're obviously at some point then, if he has passed away or is incapacitated, they would have to come out with some announcement in time. And so even, let's say, he was in a vegetative state, they would still give her the power, wouldn't they?
No question. And it will take a little bit more time, but sooner or later, something's going to have to happen, because what we're seeing in terms of his official appearances are quite questionable.
Does she hate the United States?
Oh, of course, absolutely. Perhaps even more so. As you said earlier, Jong-un has always been a little bit more détente, if you will, and she absolutely is not that way.
Yeah, all the pictures I have seen with him waving and saluting and smiling, I mean, he seems like he was just out for a PR effort and having a good time. She seems to be all business, doesn't she?
No question about it, and that's a little bit scary, because we now know that they absolutely have nuclear capability on their submarines. We photographed this last year them transporting nuclear material to the Sinpo Naval Base. This is where they keep their submarines.
And as you and I both know, being in the Navy, William, it's our nuke subs that have always been the deterrent, because those things are parked right off the coasts of these other countries, and they may be doing the same thing to us.
No question. Now, they have diesel submarines, but you have to remember, we lost a half a dozen of them not that many years ago. South Koreans and our Navy couldn't find them for a week. When they go silent on the battery, they're hard to find. So if they have nuclear-tipped torpedoes or even nuclear ballistic missiles at this point, that could really be very frightening.
We're with William Craig Reed. After the break, we're going to talk about his new work, Spies of the Deep, about a tragedy that occurred 20 years ago. And how did that react with Vladimir Putin? How did he handle this situation? We'll get into that in a moment with William. The situation we are talking about today was released from a statement from North Korea's embassy in Moscow. Well, now that's an interesting question, too. Why did it come out of the embassy in Moscow and not directly from the country of North Korea, from North Korea?
Yes, a very interesting question indeed, and I think it has to do with, again, if it is Yo Jung pulling the trigger, she is stirring it up in Russia as well and making it look as if perhaps North Korea and Russia are
in cahoots
together, if you will.
Absolutely. How does she get along with the Chinese?
Actually, quite well. The Chinese look at North Korea as a trading partner. I think they look at everyone they'd like to have a relationship with as someone they can make money from. And that's really the relationship there. I wouldn't say that they would go to war for North Korea, but they are certainly defensive because they have some economic interests.
Lex has Mr. Craig Reed's website all linked up at coasttocoastam.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about this August 2000 tragedy, 118 Russian naval personnel on board of their Kursk submarine died when this thing went down. We'll talk about that and the ramifications of it next. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with William Craig Reed. We're talking about his latest book now, Spies of the Deep. How many books do you have out there now, William, including Spies of the Deep?
Oh, I guess I'm approaching a dozen at this point.
Good for you. Good for you. They're all powerful books. Now, as your naval career expanded, a former diver, submariner, how has this military experience influenced your writing?
Very much so. As I wrote about, not only in Red November, but I also talked about this in Spies of the Deep, my last mission, we were a mile off the coast of Russia. We're supposed to be there. I couldn't talk about it for decades, and we ran into a Russian submarine, came up underneath it, smashed our sail. We had flooding and some damage and hurt people, and they chased us for 3 days, shooting torpedoes at us, depth charging. And that actually shaped a lot of what I wrote about later on because I had lived through it. And one of the lieutenants aboard that submarine with me later became the admiral in charge of all NATO submarine operations. So I kept in touch with him and many others and learned a lot of behind-the-scenes things. And that really spurred me to write about the curse because when I heard about it going down in August 2000, that incident came back pretty hard.
It sure did. And the Russian Navy, they kind of botched the search, didn't they?
They did, yes. There were a lot of issues there. I was privileged to actually interview a lot of people involved in this, not only Russians, some of the people in the Navy and the government circles, but also the Norwegian ship that actually was brought in to do the rescue. It's mostly British. And the actual divers, the first two divers that stepped foot aboard the Kursk, or Finn aboard the Kursk, as well as their dive supervisors, many others involved in that. And I've got to tell you, what they uncovered, I saw actual video that they showed me, pictures, documents. I was shocked. I was shocked by what I found out.
Oh, that sub was obliterated. They finally pulled up the wreckage eventually. And apparently the explosion was caused by the kerosene fuel from their torpedoes that they exploded, right?
Absolutely not. That's what they told us, and that is the big lie.
Uh-huh.
The big cover-up. That's correct. So we have to actually go back to August of 99. Putin had 2% of the vote, and the Kursk submarine went on a top-secret mission and got very close to an aircraft carrier we've heard about recently, the Theodore Roosevelt, the one we've heard about with
COVID.
That's
right.
So close that they got a firing solution, did not get detected. They came back. Putin met with the captain of that sub, went down to the pier, became an honorary submariner. His father was a submariner, and promised to bring Russia back to greatness. That's how he won the presidency. He got 53% of the vote in March. 8 days after he came to power, he threw in jail a U.S. spy, a former naval officer, Edmund Pope, who was trying to get plans on Russia's new rocket torpedo. They didn't want that, so they threw him in jail. Well, that's the torpedo that blew up in the Kursk, not the kerosene one they told us about.
Wow. And the fact that they were so lax in finding that sub and getting it picked up, what does that tell you?
Well, A, they didn't want anyone to find out about this torpedo. They had code books. They had nuclear missiles, if you will, et cetera. So that's certainly a part of it. But the other part is just a lot of botched operations and pride and you name it, a number of things that happened during this operation. And what I reveal in Spies of the Deep is that they actually botched it so bad that they may have caused the demise of the 23 survivors.
Interesting take. Now, tell us about the significance of the Kursk going down. I mean, why did you write about it?
Well, I wanted to bring out the truth, because when I heard about it going down in August of 2000, not only did it hit those of us who'd served pretty hard, even though we'd been enemies a decade earlier, we're a brotherhood. And so that hit us all hard. But I knew they were lying. I knew that what we were being told was not the truth. The facts weren't adding up. It took me 20 years to pull all that out. I actually got a chance to finally speak with submariners who were aboard the Memphis and the Toledo, who were right next door. They were very close by when this happened. And I discovered, again, some shocking things, that it appears that one of those submarines may have gotten too close and may have been involved in causing this in the first place.
Oh, geez. And the personnel aboard probably went pretty quickly, I would guess.
The whole front of that submarine was gone, and there were only 23 survivors in the back end. But they could have been rescued had the Russians done this properly or brought in help right away.
And quickly. How deep was the sub when it was in trouble?
350 feet. And by the way, that actually makes it more difficult for a rescue, because the rescue vehicles, the deep submergence rescue vehicles, actually can get a better seal when they're a little bit deeper than when they're shallower. It's just harder to get a seal because there's not enough ocean pressure to keep them down or locked onto the back of the sub.
William, today, where is Putin's popularity in Russia? I mean, he still seems to constantly get elected, and then he steps down and lets Medvedev pop in, and then he comes back again. I mean, is this guy going to be around forever?
Most likely. He is a consummate chess player. He thinks 6-8 moves ahead. He should have been booted out 6 months after his presidency when the Kursk went down.
Yeah.
But he leveraged that, and he found a way to wrest control from oligarchs, take control of the energy firms, and rocket Russia back to greatness, and that's boosted his popularity. Even today, he's still quite popular. And what, a couple of weeks, not even that, a little over a week, on July 1, they're going to have a vote, and most likely he'll win. And that will keep him in power probably till he's so old he can't move.
And if he doesn't technically win, I think he will, because don't they control the election machines and everything else?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, so we know what's going to happen. And I remember the story when he pretty well destroyed that guy who hit up the Yukos Oil and Energy Company.
Exactly. That was the wresting of control of the oligarchs. That was the first thing. He basically threw him in jail and a kangaroo court and just wrested control. And now there's some lawsuits going on around that, by the way, some of the things that Putin has done. But he still lined his pocket with billions and then propelled Russia back to greatness and put a lot of that investment into the military, mostly into the submarine Navy, because his father was a submariner. And he now is wresting control of all kinds of resources around the world.
Did those oligarchs illegally obtain these companies?
In many cases, yes.
Yeah.
They weren't faced with a lot of restrictions. You know, at that time, Yeltsin just wasn't doing much. He had an equal dose of vodka and corruption pretty much daily. So a lot of things were signed and signed over that should not have been. And to Putin's credit, he did see that that needed to get cleaned up. How he did it was backhanded and ruthless, but that came from his KGB back.
And he profited from this too, didn't he?
And he profited greatly, billions and billions.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I keep hearing he may be as rich as Jeff Bezos or Bill Gates. Is that even
most
conceivable,
likely.
Really?
It is, yeah. He did pocket quite a few billions during this time, and it's just grown since.
Where's his money? It's not in Russian banks, is it?
All over the world, I suspect. Maybe in the Caribbean.
William Craig Reed with us. His book, Spies of the Deep. We'll take calls next hour about this story and also North Korea as well with him. It is going to be interesting with this re-election. I would bet right now that Putin will win by a small landslide.
No question about it. It's not really an election.
How is his relationship with President Trump? I mean, we keep hearing all kinds of stories.
I don't think it's a buddy-buddy type relationship. Putin, again, is a consummate chess player, so he is thinking far ahead. And when you see strings being pulled here or there, it's not because he loves this person or that person. He's very protective of his Russian people. He uses a word that says Russian people when he speaks, not the Russian people. It's like his family. And that's his primary concern. And so if he looks like he's backing a candidate, it's because he sees them as perhaps the lesser of another evil that will not block him as much as perhaps another candidate.
Technologically, how has Russian's submarines changed since this disaster 20 years ago?
Dramatic. There are some very incredible capabilities. So we have to look at what happened from the Kursk. This is really interesting because this technology they had 20 years ago was supercavitating technology. It's like a force field around the front end of this torpedo that allowed it to hit 200 knots underwater. And now today it's 2 and 3 times that. So they have gone a long way from that. And they have also turned it over to the Chinese, North Koreans, the Iranian. But they have a new torpedo called the Status 6. And it's the subject of my novel coming out at the end of this year. If you want to be frightened more than the coronavirus, this is the book to read. But it's 10 times bigger than any torpedo, and it uses this technology, same technology, so it can supercavitate, go very fast. It's very quiet, and has a 100-megaton nuclear warhead.
Jeez.
It can take out all of Southern California with one torpedo.
Now, just so people who might be at home shaking in their boots, William, we've got subs ready to do the same thing.
No question about it, although we don't have something like the Status 6, at least it's not been announced. But we do have some pretty incredible capabilities in our Virginia-class submarines.
How about the Chinese? What are they up to?
Chinese also reverse-engineered this same technology, so they have these rocket torpedoes, but they have now taken that same supercavitating technology and have submarines that can rocket from Shanghai to San Francisco in a heartbeat, incredibly fast. And they are also developing very powerful new missiles. They call it the Assassin's Mace. It's Mach 10. Can take out our entire carrier group in a matter of minutes. Ballistic missile submarines have become very advanced very quickly over the past decade.
Do you think... what does your gut tell you? Are we leading up to a third world war? And as many experts have said, it'll be the last one.
If not a third world war, we are going to have a number of very bloody skirmishes over resources and most likely sea lanes. I think a lot of people don't understand the importance of sea lanes. We've been hit pretty hard with coronavirus. People stand in line to get toilet paper. Imagine that times 10, because 90% of what we buy wherever comes to us across sea lanes.
That's right.
And if the Russians lock them up or the Chinese lock them up or Iranians take out some sea lanes like the Strait of Hormuz, we're in trouble. That could really hit our economy, and right now would be the worst time for us to get hit.
And wasn't the Panama Canal once a checkpoint also, and now we've lost that?
No question. Yeah, we're going backward when it comes to sea lanes.
The Chinese definitely have an eye on Taiwan. Something's going to happen there. And are we prepared to stop that?
Not really. We'd like to think that we have the capability to do that, but their Navy now is very advanced. And while it would be a bloody fight, it would be very difficult for us to win that battle. Most likely what they would do is position the chess pieces to make it so difficult for us to counter those. It would have to escalate so high that we would have to see the cost of countering their moves as lower than the cost of, say, keeping Taiwan free or some of these other things that the Chinese want to do.
And I think Taiwan might go like Hong Kong, where basically it's given back, sort of, though it was really never a part of the Chinese. It wasn't theirs in the first place. But it's very possible and conceivable that it could be done without any gunfire being shot.
Absolutely. And that's most likely the case. I think it's important that we understand that having all this military might is not so that it can be used. It's so that it can be used as the big stick you're carrying while you're walking softly, so to speak. It's the way for the Chinese, the Russians, Iranians, whomever, to make a move and have it very difficult, if not impossible, for the U.S., the EU, or NATO to counter.
Make a prediction for us, William, over the next 5 to 10 years, how you think this planet will unfold.
I think we're going to see our first conflicts and some of the worst ones up in the Arctic. We have to keep in mind that Putin has locked up the entire northern sea route. The ice has melted, like it or not, believe it or not, go up there and look. It's melted, and so now we're having thousands of ships cross the northern sea route because it shaves 40% off the time and cost.
That's right.
And Putin has completely taken control of that whole route. Naval bases fortified. They've got ships and submarines. And we recently sent a number of destroyers up there on a freedom of navigation operation to say to Putin, oh, you can't do that. Well, we really brought a knife to a gunfight. We had a couple of ships against their whole armada and all these fortified naval bases, and we don't even have an Arctic hardened ship.
I mean, will he allow any kind of cargo ship to go through there?
Yes, but he's charging for it. So he's basically saying, you can go through.
Like a toll bridge.
You're going to pay us. A toll bridge, exactly. He's the bad cop.
And in terms of how much he's charging, I bet it's a pretty penny.
No question about it, but still, if you're saving 40%, you can afford to give him 10%.
It may be worth doing. That's true. I mean, and there again is his brilliance.
No question.
My gosh. All right. Well, William, we're going to come back in a moment and talk more about Spies of the Deep, and we'll take phone calls. In terms of your website, people can get your older books as well?
Absolutely. They're all there. Novel won't be out till later this year, the Status 6 one, but all the other books are there. WCraigReed.com, WCraigReed.com.
Any of your books ever turned into movies?
Not yet. I had a couple options, but and some close ones, but we'll see. One of them is potential.
You're bound to pop one.
The potential block.
That would be great.
Bound to pop one sooner or later.
All right, stay with us. We're going to open up the phone lines now and take calls next hour with William Craig Reed, author of the latest book, Spies of the Deep.